We have to.
Because I used to bring lunch. I used to have to write stuff.
I'd like to call the March 16th meeting of Ways and Means to order. Resolution number 11, requesting enactment of a Senate and Assembly bill near state legislature for a special law in relation to hotel and motel room occupancy tax. Motion?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second it for discussion.
Discussion? Chair Bartels?
Thank you. There was some discussion coming out of the last meeting. I think it was raised at Ways and Means about the creation of a working group to actually get stakeholders to the table. So it's my intention to put together a working group comprised primarily of members of this committee and the Economic Development Committee, but it may include, I'm going to reserve the right to potentially include additional members, and working with the sponsor, Legislator Maloney, to engage stakeholders and have some real discussion on the subject. So that's my intention. Legislator Maloney, I was just saying that's my intention to put together a working group comprised primarily of members of this and the Economic Development Committee, but reserving the latitude to extend that to other members potentially, and of course working with you as a sponsor to engage stakeholders in a conversation on the subject.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I think that I've heard a lot of different ideas bantered about, and I think having the opportunity to weigh each of them and hear from various different stakeholders is a good opportunity, and I look forward to that.
We spoke about that the other day, and I hope to get that out in like the next couple days. I don't want to bother anybody during NYSAC, but I hope to have that kind of out there in the next couple of days. And going back a couple of years ago, we did the same type of thing with plastic bags, and it was just a matter of filling in the blank on a couple of things, and then whether or not it's going to pass is another thing, but it's just to get permission. So over the next couple of days, hopefully everybody gets an email, and anybody that wants to come, we can figure out what the percentage is, you know, craft this thing to what we're sending off to the state.
Thank you. So I have a couple of concerns with it. One is the necessity for it in the first place, right? Do we actually even need to request a home rule request? My understanding of how the process works is that there's a conversation between either the requesting executive or the chairman of the legislature to contact, or the person who wants it to contact their state representatives and ask them to craft the home rule bill that would then come back here, that we would then create a resolution to accept or not. Right? Is that accurate?
So I believe that we need a resolution from the body, which this would be, to get home rule bill introduced. So they don't allow home rule bills to be really introduced unless they've got a request from the
the
county.
So my point was that they contact the county to draft the home rule request before they do that, though. In other words, they're not sitting up there waiting for a request to do it, to draft it. They work before they create it, and then we send it to them, so we're on the same page as it goes there. Because right now, as far as I know, has anybody at the state level been contacted to support this, to sponsor it, for one thing?
Well, the people I had spoken to recommended that we actually get a vote on it and get it passed, and then you start looking for state legislators to carry it.
Right.
That's so this has always been the process that I've seen done, Brian, at the state level, is we request a home rule bill, and then legislators decide or not to introduce one.
Right. Okay, so the second thing is, right, is that I really do believe that we should have the working group assembled prior to doing this, and know what we're, have a finalized request. In other words, we should have our ducks in a row prior to asking any state representative to carry it for us. And right now, I don't think we do. I don't think we have, you know, we haven't heard from the Lodging Coalition. We haven't heard from all of the legislature, right? And there's, you know, the Lodging Coalition represents a very specific group that I can see. There's a lot of other people that have rentals that we haven't heard from yet that would be affected by this, right? And I think that we should give everybody an opportunity to pitch in and give an opinion prior to sending it. I'm not against it, but I just think that we have to tighten it up and get support for it prior to, you know, going up there.
Thank you. Chair Martels, and then Legislator Maloney.
So A couple of things. It's long been the policy of this body to pass a resolution, as Legislator Ron said first, requesting the home rule request, and then to ask someone to carry it, and then to pass a resolution approving it should it come back. It's only recently that I realized that it's not necessarily a requirement. I think it's the best practice, but in reality, an individual can request a home rule request, and if someone carries it, then the request comes back to the body. And in fact, we recently had that situation where private meetings were held with members of our electeds at the state level. I think this is the best approach to get consensus from the body, so that when we're asking, you know, the state level representatives, that it's coming from the body and not just from one or two legislators. I do make a commitment to Legislator Maloney's point that by the end of the week, and not in an isolation chamber with input, I'll make appointments to this working group, and we can get, you know, we can get that started. I also think it's critical that at the same time, once there's a sense of what we're asking for, that there's a level, that there is some outreach to our state electeds to see if someone would be willing to carry it, and that's why it would be helpful if we actually knew specifically what we were asking for first, and so hopefully that working group will get to that point.
Maloney, Petite, and then Walter.
So the two concerns I heard, I think the first one was kind of answered. Second one, I think you're looking to be a little more specific. I originally had looked to get permission but it seems a couple of people want to get specific. So while we're working in this working group, I think the plan that you and I spoke about, Chair, was to get a little more specific and actually be asking for more or less what we're going to be asking for when it comes back, which I think is probably how you feel as well, be a little more specific. I left it. I set a ceiling and said we're going to stay within this. But if we want to kind of set where we're going to be at, and we're sending it off at that point, which is what a couple of people asked for. So in the working group, I think we're going to get more specific. Mm-hmm. Everybody be at the table, not just the Lodging Coalition. I've come up with some other, I think, private entities that probably should be heard out, and the public. I think I'm fine with that. I look forward to it.
Ms. Larry Petit.
Thank you. This issue's come up, I think, every other year for the last 6 years, and this is the first time I'm hearing that you need to find somebody to carry the legislation before we can send them request.
Before okay. we can, I mean, you need a state legislator to carry the authority for us.
But we would need to pass that first and then find somebody. Okay.
You well, what
don't need to, but it's a bit of practice.
It's our practice.
But what Legislator Cahill was saying that he was wondering if there was contact before we even sent it off, and the consensus is kind of no. I think that what might be confusing you.
I just don't want this can kicked down the road any further. We either have to decide if we can come to some sort of resolution on it, excuse the pun, or just never bring it up again.
So I just want to clarify, for me, what I'd feel most comfortable doing is I don't want to vote no on it, but I would prefer a take no action kind of thing until we get to do this process, so that it's not just, so it remains sort of on our agenda, as opposed to my only other choice would be no. So it'd either be no or no action, and so I guess I would put forth the idea that we would take no action on this at this time, let this process unravel, and then we could then bring it back on.
That was the plan. I wasn't anticipating a vote. I always prefer postponement, but
I felt the postponement would suggest a specific other meeting, while the take no action perhaps leaves it a little more.
I always feel like postponement puts us on the clock, but
I mean, a postponement would allow the sponsor to not consent to the, you know, postponement, and then that starts the clock on the 3 months that in the rules. That's the only other thing. I'd be willing to do it whichever way. I have a good feeling that we're
going to get to this, so I really don't. Do no action as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer that.
Okay. Yes, at this point, I would support the working group, but to be honest with you, Zoel, I'm not comfortable with increasing at this time. I mean, we just came off over 2-year pandemic where a lot of these businesses are just starting to regain traction to get business back going into their hotels and motels and Airbnbs. And all of a sudden, here we are now, we're going to go throw another stumbling block in front of them with either a 2 to 6% increase. I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be done. I just think that the timing is terrible. Totally terrible.
That's 15.
Thank you. Yeah, there's never going to be a good time. However, the 2% is paid for by the people utilizing the service. And the surrounding counties are at 4%. Also, if you go online, I mean, we have a wonderful marketing and tourism just ways of getting out all this information. And I don't know how many times I saw Mohawk Mountain House and Pine Grove Ranch and the one up in Shandaken. So the advertising, so I mean, the county is doing a lot without charging the, you know, the hotels and the motels for a marketing service, including Ulster Live, including advertising in the city. You know, and again, this isn't an additional fee for them. It goes to the user.
Sorry, wrong.
I mean, yeah, with all due respect, I mean, a lot of that comes from the occupancy tax and or I Love New York funds and or, you know, the state, you know, tourism promotion funds. So I understand what you're saying, Laura, and I personally, you know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, it's not a bad thing that we're lower than our surrounding counties. Maybe that makes us a draw. Not that someone is going to for sure, you know, go to, you know, Ulster rather than Orange or Dutchess because of a lower tax rate, you know. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, you know, having the lower tax actually makes us better, personally.
Say Fabiano.
Yes, to answer Legislator Pettit, you keep saying that the user is going to be responsible for this extra amount and not the owner. But, you know, the user's got a lot of other things going around right now. Inflation is through the roof. Gas prices are going through the roof. Food prices in the grocery store is going through the roof. Where does it end for these people? Where is it going to end?
Don't take vacations.
You know?
Since this is going to be a postponement, I think we can move on soon, but I would like to just make a couple of quick points about what's been said. First of all, I look forward to your support, putting the $34 million back on the tax rolls. Surely that same approach would call for that. I'll be shocked if you don't after that. But the other thing is, I truly don't believe, or anyone else that's going to be voting for this ultimately when we get it there, voting for it, believes that it harms the business owner in any way. And quite honestly, you know, Dean, if somebody's got $700 a night to stay up at an Airbnb in West Saugerties, I don't think they're worried about that 2 or 3 or 4%. I really believe that, and we're heading for tough economic times. We have to 10% inflation.
Yep.
We might be hitting a point that even the people that have been here a long time may have never seen the decisions we're going to have to start making.
Right.
So we're going to be raising taxes one way or another. Every other tax we're going to talk about raising is going to be affecting our constituents. This is a tax that doesn't affect our constituents. I wish we could change the name of it because it's a tax like no other. But let's have that conversation. Let's come up with a bill and vote on it. I'm ready for a postponement.
Okay.
Or a not action.
Thank you. When we do talk about the impact on businesses, I hope we'll bring in workers from those businesses, not just the owners. That's one point.
Yes.
And then another is, let's remember one reason that you've said that you've proposed this, and it's to deal with our housing crisis. Let's try and find a way to raise some revenues. So if this isn't the way, then we have the meeting. Thank you. Legislator Walter for the 30th, just on housing. We have to come up with some other solutions. Thank you.
Did you actually want to make that motion?
Oh.
So
no, there wouldn't be a motion, just wouldn't take any action. So it's fun.
Okay. Thank you all. Number 17, setting a public hearing for local law number 3, local law amending. Local
I'll
law.
Move it for discussion.
Second?
Second.
Walter,
it.
Discussion? Second.
I've said this before, I'm not on my radar, didn't come up here thinking about this, but as I heard from constituents and people that don't want their name mentioned and what they were making, working 100% for the county without the county benefits, through these contracts that I think a lot of times we end up giving out because we can pay cheaper. It's just out of sight, out of mind. I hope to achieve a couple of things by putting this up, to have a conversation about what we do in-house and what we do out, you know, what we contract out to and why we make those decisions. I really want to remind everybody about this at budget time when we're giving out these raises that we give out to the people at the top 1% of this county. Sometimes I'm really shocked at how the nobody minds, no due diligence, no cries for more data or more information. 115,000, 120,000, 110,000. Now, countywide elected officials want the big bucks, and if, I mean, you know, 10,000 more, and I'm sure we'll have Elon Musk looking to run for exec. So, but this is about the least of us. It only affects a couple of people. I do not believe with, you know, when I hear these things on the national and state level talked about raising the minimum wage to $20, I think it's insanity and would have so many negative consequences that would end up hurting the middle class. This is not that. It's a select few people that we're making sure get paid decent, right? Whether we do it, right now we're doing it for DSS. These are the people working with our troubled youth, our elderly, and they don't get the good benefits. And quite honestly, I've heard firsthand accounts on people during the day working for DSS and at night, you know, going to DSS for help or filling out things online for to get checks. And that's on us. And it's definitely on us when we spend at the top the way we do. So as far as I know, John Parody went through this with his $15. I got to the point where we're never going to be able to give you a dot. We're never going to be able. Well, see, it's going to be $962,000.57. That's what it's going to cost the county this year. Next year, let me give you that exact number. We're never going to have it. Every contract's different. It's $5 an hour if they're making 15. You can assume they're making 15. There's a couple of people, and you know, you can figure out each contract. We got basically given a mining expedition a couple of days ago where they just dumped a bunch of stuff on us. There was no way I think Amber and Natalie should be going through that trying to come up with these numbers, which I think are almost impossible to come up with. So in the same, to echo John Parody a couple of years ago, it's a million, it's 2 million, it's 5 million. Let's say it's 5 million. It's not, but I'm ready for a vote either way.
Say, Ron.
Thanks. You know, I'm sort of in the same boat as on the other side as Legislator Maloney. I'll tell you, there were calls for more information last year. During budget time, a lot of them were actually by me and Chairman Gavaris with several amendments. I stood firm on mine and, you know, lit my relationship with the other side of the building on fire in the process, which is fine because I think that the raises were out of control and the spending is out of control, and that's why I voted against the budget. You know, that having been said, I can't support this at this time. I respect where you're coming from. I was against those raises. I was against the $15 because of concerns I had about it raising the cost of contracts. I'm against this one because I'm concerned about the cost of contracts raising.
Consistent. I appreciate Chair Rattas.
So I supported the $15 raises, and I think you're right. There wasn't a firm financial handle on what that was going to cost. We had a little bit of a sense, but we definitely didn't have a solid number, definitely not down to pennies, and we heard a lot back on how that would impact in certain of the contracts, compression issues, and would require raises sort of up their internal chain. You know, that was only a couple months ago. I feel open-minded to this conceptually, but I really do feel like I think it's a big difference. Is it going to cost $1 million or is it going to cost $5 million? Is it going to result in those same kinds of compression issues? So I'm more inclined to have this conversation as part of the budget conversation. I mean, that's one thing I want to say, and I also feel like in order to be a yes for this, actually on the proposal, not the public hearing, but to be a yes for this, I would need some more information in terms of fiscal impact. But unlike what I think I'm hearing Legislator Ron say, I'm open, I think, to potentially spending increased funds, particularly for the jobs we're talking about. You know, I have heard anecdotally, not in the same direct way that Legislator Maloney has more second hand, but I have heard anecdotally about very low wages being paid for jobs that surprised me, which jobs they were. And I think that is something we need to deal with at this county. I'm just not ready to jump all in without the information at this moment.
So
pass it to Walter.
Thanks. I think that we actually were able to come up with an amount for the $15 because there was an amendment put into the budget that was intended to cover what we expected it to be. So we did somehow come up with a dollar amount when it came time to budget, which also argues why associating it with the budget time would make sense. I find that there's several things that just make me uncomfortable and concerned. I haven't seen sort of the data yet. The only thing I've received was just a list of the many organizations that would be impacted. We've already heard when it was $15 that impact on family, which was just one of those 100 agencies, and how it impacts compression. You know, it's true, these nonprofits, you don't make a lot of money working for nonprofits. $15 an hour puts you in the mid-30s. $20 an hour puts you in the mid-40s. That's higher than our median income. It's sad, but that's the world of nonprofits. But I really would need to understand how this also impacts compression. And also, what I get worried about, especially because a lot of these contracts will be in my committee, is then every time an ask is an increased ask from the year before is in front of us, then I've got to struggle to figure out how to explain that increased ask and to see, is this because of the $20 increase or the $15 increase? And it becomes, you know, it ends up pitting us against these organizations because we have to challenge them on why they're asking us for more money. And it's not a comfortable place. So I feel like taking the time, really understanding its implications. As far as these people not getting benefits, this is not going to change whether they get benefits or not. So I'm not quite sure, you know, that might be its own resolution that people you're hiring actually get health insurance, or maybe we pass universal health care and then we wouldn't have to worry about it. But I feel like there's a lot of cans of worms that are going to be opened, and I would want to understand and how we're going to respond to all of those, because it hasn't been easy with this $15 already.
All right. Maloney, Litz, did you have your hand up, Ken?
Yeah.
Rob, and then.
Some of these jobs aren't 40. You know, I think 32 hours a week is considered full-time. So, and even at 40 hours a week, it's about 40,000. So it's not the 40s or mid-30s. It's a lot less than that after taxes and health care and everything else, if they're paying for it themselves or... what I mentioned was they aren't getting the good county health care. This is a public hearing, and the reason I never really counted on getting this passed necessarily, I really was about, half of this was about the conversation. And just this week, we drove up, many of us probably filed for mileage, we stayed in a hotel on the county tax dollar, we get health care as part-time elected officials, we don't worry about money. Money ain't a concern there. But it is a concern with somebody making a living wage doing literally God's work. But if that's the take we want to have, that's exactly one of the things I hope to get out of putting legislation up like this, making us think, look at that view we got out there. It's pretty awesome. Let's get out of that bubble once in a while. But anyways, it is just a public hearing. Surely at this point we have enough information for a public hearing, I would think. But if not, like I said, I would prefer a vote at this point. I don't plan on providing much more information because I truly don't believe there's much more to give. There was absolutely no number. I went back and listened, and you were here.
Yep.
That was a guesstimate at best, and that's where we're at again. Mark's nodding. I don't think we had a consistent number for the $15. I don't know how to come up with a consistent number. You can kind of figure out. It's going to be a little more per contract.
Can I respond to that? Legislator, you should tell, put in an amendment at that point during our budget time. There was an amount that was identified. At the time of the vote of the $15, there was none. But when it came to the budget period, we did put aside money, and there was an amount calculated. That's what I'm referencing.
Okay.
Right. If I could respond to that, what Legislator Maloney's saying, and I agree with him, it's not like a concrete number. It's an estimate.
It's
everything in a budget's
an
estimate.
Right.
But
it was better than nothing.
After the vote. Yeah.
Even if there was a number, there's unintended consequences that people don't realize. Our youth program this year is going to be cut short because The county said they're going to raise the hourly rate for the children, the youth that will be working under the program to $14 an hour. Well, our law says 15, so they have to pay $15 an hour. So I asked the question, so what are we going to do for funding? Well, the funding is set, so we're just going to hire less kids. So there's an unintended consequence. The program is so that kids coming up, especially the youth in troubled areas and urban areas, can get a work ethic, can work during the summer, make some money, and hopefully that puts them on a good path for the rest of their life. But the unintended consequence is we're not going to hire that many kids because we don't have the money, because there's unintended consequences to every action you take. You need to take the time to understand what they're going to be. You're never going to find them all, but you should at least try to investigate as many as you can. And that should affect the decision that you make when you make a law and set a policy. And I think sometimes we move way too fast because we're very narrow-sighted. We got blinders on. We're focused on this issue. And everything else falls away on the outside because there's unintended consequences to every single decision we make, and we don't take the time to understand that.
Did I say it wrong?
I'm good.
Good. Okay.
Thank you. So the list we have is 269 contracts. 269. That's the list that we got the other day, right? The active contracts subject to living wage law is 269 on the spreadsheet that we got last week. So for me, I see Family of Woodstock on there, and we just had to have all of the trouble that we had with that $15 an hour is just going to happen again, because they just had to have all increase their salaries for the compression issue to bring people to $15 an hour. Now we're going to be $20 an hour. So it's just going to keep getting worse and worse. And then when you go back, you know, I don't know what Family was paying before that, but it was probably closer to $12 an hour maybe, right? So now you're up like, you know, 70% of the wage increase in 2 years that we have to budget for. And we have 269 contracts that we just have no idea how many of those are going to be impacted by this, right? And I said this when this was first proposed, that, you know, I wanted these folks who are living in substandard wages is really what they are. I do want to see them come up, right? But to just go across the board without knowing what we're talking about, I mean, this may be something that we have to do over a few years, not in 1 year, because the financial impact, as you stated before, Legislator Maloney, is we're going to face some hard times with inflation, right? And we are going to have to raise taxes, right? So just piling onto that without knowing what we're doing, to me, is a little bit worrisome. I know this is for a public hearing, but what is a public hearing for? We don't know. We can't tell the public what they're coming to talk about. We're saying that we want to raise some people up to $20 an hour. We don't know what that is, right? And for me, that that's a troubling point for me.
Chair Bartels?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Legislator, with all of what Legislator Cahill just said. It occurs to me that it may be a worthy exercise to take a random sampling of four or five of these contracts and drill down on the numbers, and it could be purely random, whether it's our financial people or with these assistance of the executive side, just to start to get a sense. And I do just think it's important to acknowledge and comment on what Legislator Litt said. This is the first I've heard of that, and I hear the point about unintended consequences, but I can tell you, just sitting here today, to the extent that we're talking about the difference of $1 an hour, I definitely think that as a body we should find out what that difference means and fund the difference if it means one or two less kids are getting hired. That seems to me there's only so far that could go on a $1 an hour difference. So I definitely would like to get the specifics on that and might be prepared to bring forward a resolution funding that differential.
Well, I think the federal government used to pay reimburses $10 an hour. So
yeah, I just would like to know the full picture of it.
All right,
Chris has got the answer.
To Herb's point, actually, I just sat down with Amber and Vicky the other day and was spoke about an amendment for those kinds of programs, that there would be
that this would not apply, and we could talk about a couple different things. Had I known that was going to hold up the public hearing, I would have had it written for you. But that is being dealt with, and it's something we just spoke about a couple days ago.
But when the resolution came up, I brought it up that we need to have exemptions for youth and those types of things, and everybody never and whatever. And I don't know if you remember, I voted no on the law because they would not make an amendment that excluded youth and other programs that would impair the ability for us to.
Oh, okay.
The $15 an hour.
Oh, I was like, all right, mention it to you.
So I just want to say, I mean, if we are picking a random sample, it's also important to talk to these organizations because, again, the compression issue, we got to know how to handle it when they're telling us that it's going to cost more because they have to raise other people. The other part is so many of these programs it's flow-through money, it's grant money. And so ultimately, when this is put forth, if it does eventually pass, it needs to have a one-year-out date because these organizations need the opportunity to put this increase into their grant applications, which often are 6 months out. And so, you know, out of respect, because what ends up happening is then we'll have to cover all that cost. But if they have the ability to put it in their grant proposals, or whether, you know, the request from the state for reimbursement or their grant proposals, you know, I think that having a delayed time period, should it ever pass, will allow them to prepare for it, because almost all of these are, I would be surprised if, you know, would you say a large percentage of these are getting either flow through federal, state, or grant of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, most of them are DSS contracts probably, and we pay 30% or whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
Or grants. If I could just finish, because Herb had interrupted before and I was fine, okay. But I like the crosstalk, but
sorry.
All right. Brian's point, we have 270 contracts that we have identified as, you can look glass half full or glass half empty. You can look at, we're underpaying people in 270 contracts and growing.
We don't know that.
So,
we just
possibly.
Know we have contracts with them.
Yep. So, once again, my point stands, and this is just a public hearing. And I think another thing that I think we need to talk more about is how we've moved towards this. The not-for-profit thing is just because somebody says they're not-for-profit doesn't mean they're doing everything they possibly can. Just like every project that is a housing project, we get so scared we have to vote for it. I think we need to take a closer look at these not-for-profits, see how they're functioning. We don't vet them very well. We trust them. We hear stories about how their employees are being treated. But once again, out of sight, out of mind. And we're contracting more and more and more, and there's more not-for-profits showing up every day with their handout. And grant money is tax money, and I just don't think there's a real diligent conversation happening, except for this resolution. This is the diligence I really want and everything else that I don't get, but I'm happy we're getting it somewhere.
Rock?
I'm good.
You're good.
Changed my mind again.
Chris.
There's no need to belabor it. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to address Legislator Liston's point. So we planned on serving 119 youth in the Summer Youth Employment Program, and we're estimating now that it'll be 114, 115. So we'll go back to the funding stream and see if that's going to, if we're going to be able to increase there, and I'll circle back with everybody. But there is an impact.
That's the only way I get there.
Yes. I will do that.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I mean, if you're looking at numbers, all right, $20 an hour is about $40,000. Less taxes, FICA, Social Security, you're talking $32,000. To get a two-bedroom apartment is, what, $1,900 to $2,300? Gee, where are you going to spend that other $4,000 when you have to buy food, when you have to pay for a car, when you have to, you know, and yet we're sitting on $34 million that we brought in extra sales tax revenues. When are we going to start investing back into our community? I mean, this is a community that wants to live here, that wants to buy here, and coming back from that really nice conference, and you know, the hotel was great at 4%. that's what we heard, is that we can't, in the human services, because they're being underpaid, we can't find the daycare providers, we can't find the teachers. Head Start's paying their teachers minimum wage. And now what they're going to do is go remote because they can't find the staffing. And what happens when they go remote? Well, then these parents can't go back to work anyway. I mean, we're just creating a revolving door of poverty. And this is the only way right now that I can think of to help address that problem.
Legislator Erner, then Rock.
Yeah, I check with you.
So, this particular hearing on a resolution originated with the Fair Pay for Home Care advocates. For those who haven't heard about this, they've been going to the state for a very long time, saying that you're paying minimum wage for people to take care of people in my house. So that's where this came from, and if we have a hearing, we're going to be hearing from those people. If we decide not to have a hearing, then we're not hearing from, like Joe said, some of the...
anybody.
Right. Another point that Legislator Uchitel has made in previous discussion around this is a lot of these things used to be done in-house, and if we decide that these contractors are not willing to do what we think is correct by the people of Ulster County, then we can decide to return this to a county function and not go out for bid on all these contracts. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we're talking about who sent me here to be here today in this office is poor people, working class people, and middle class people are most of the people, right? Most of the people in my district, most people in everybody's district here. Why are these groups of folks not getting together and demanding we do something about the folks at the very top? Why are we not figuring out creative ways to deal with the extreme wealth inequity that we have in our county? And if we're not able to do it because of the means at our disposal, we need to go to the state and we need to tell them that they need to change the state law so that we can do more here in Ulster County to address this. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to address the public hearing comments. You know, I used to indiscriminately vote for public hearings because I always wanted to hear from the public. In recent years, I've had legislators at this table and away from this table throw those things in my face and say, well, you supported the public hearing and now you're not supporting the law, so you're flip-flopping. So now I'm very selective on which public hearings I support because of that reason, because it's been thrown at me time and time and time again when I have legitimate problems with a local law and I vote for a public hearing because I want to hear from the public. I just want to let you and Joe know that you know that's where my mind has changed on that over the years. I want to address something that Legislator Petit said, and it was about, you know, and I think Legislator Erner brought it up a little bit too, you know, when you talk about the, you know, the disparity between wages and, you know, you can't get people to work and you know, for, you know, home care, I mean, Be Fair to Direct Care absolutely is a great movement. It's been going on at the state level. The issue that we have is larger than these groups, even such a high number of contracts as with the county. You know, and it's one of the issues that I've always had with raising the minimum wage in general, because you're not really increasing wages, you're moving around staff in a lot of times. And I think that that's one thing that this could do is, you know, take people away from jobs that they already have that are underpaid, like EMTs. EMT, anybody at the table know what an EMT gets paid in the Hudson Valley?
I bet you're going to tell us. I bet you're going to tell us.
I am, but I'm just curious if anybody at the table knew. I know you know. It's usually between $14 and $18 an hour.
It's not a lot at all.
You know, and, you know, the minimum wage for, you know, fast food workers is going to go up to $15 an hour. You know, do you want to do CPR on five people in a day, or do you want to go and flip burgers? Because I can tell you right now that the amount of liability you put yourself in, the amount of stress that you put on your body, the amount, you know, shift work in general, 12-hour shifts, you know, if we raise this minimum wage to $20 an hour, I can tell you EMTs from Mobile Life, which they can't hire them as it is anyway, or local municipals are going to be flocking to these $20 an hour jobs. You know, the folks who Steve's trying to hire at Rocking Horse Ranch are going to flock to these jobs instead of being able to work there, which is going to have his costs go up, which is going to make it harder for him to be able to handle a 4% occupancy tax rate. I mean, you know, it's all about unintended consequences, and I understand the problem is larger than this, and this is like putting a piece of gum in, you know, a breach in a levee. It's just I think it's going to cause more unintended consequences than it's going to help. It's the problem is larger than this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that the point that Legislator Petit brought up was very good. Housing should not be $2,300, right? I mean, the intent, what we need to do is make sure we have enough housing so that it's not ridiculously expensive. And so, and I also, you know, my other concern of in the public hearing is, you know, well, we know we have mediocre response in public hearings. Maybe we hear from people, maybe we don't. I can't imagine anyone saying, do not raise people's salary. You know, I mean, I don't think we're going to hear that. And I know that the stuff I need is not coming from there. The stuff I would need is, how do we actually implement this with all these organizations and not be challenged after, you know, resolution after resolution? And I don't think anyone's going to come to a public hearing and share that with me. I feel like, similar to the previous one, doing due diligence, really looking at what the extent of the problem is, what the implications, we know anyone who is at the 15 is now going to have to be the 20, whatever that end was, so maybe we can use that math, but, you know, I think we should really understand this better before we could go further with setting that public hearing, because it also, having all that information out there gives people something to respond to. You know, if we're going to these organizations saying, tell us about the implications of doing this, and that's on the table, and that gets known that we're really exploring it, then people would have that to respond to. But at this, they don't really have anything to respond to except to put it to 20, and I don't think we're going to get this, like, you know, an aha moment from a public hearing that would inform us deeply of what the true implications of this is.
First of all, I really respect where Ken's coming from because he's consistent. He has a philosophy. This is his same approach to everything. So I don't, like, I really do appreciate it because it is consistent, and he does have an approach. I just wonder, just a question, a food for thought question. Has anyone, before approving tens of millions of dollars in tax dollars for not-for-profits, ever once requested how much the people at the top of these not-for-profits are making, mm-hmm. what their salaries are? Yeah. Is that something we do a lot?
Yeah, we did it last year.
Yeah, we got
really?
It.
Yeah. 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 What'd you find?
They're not paid a lot of money.
No. Most of them. Really?
Yeah.
It depends on what you think of a lot.
Yeah.
100,000?
Well, depends on the size of the organization, how much money's going through, you know.
Okay.
If you're talking like for
families. I can guarantee Elon Musk is not going to come and try to get one of those jobs.
Right.
And that information is public. You can access it.
Yeah, no, I've looked and I've been surprised at how the gap. And I'm just saying.
Rehabilitation support services.
It's all about perspective.
Some of these not-for-profits don't have many employees, so you got a couple of people at the top and then a couple of people at the bottom, and they're like this. Your butt counts.
Yeah, I would just reiterate that, you know, I mean, I hear Legislator Walter's comments in terms of the I feel the same in that the information I need, I think is more an analysis of the financial information. I don't know, because it's such a giant list, I don't know how to do it other than some sort of sampling of those, you know, a number of those contracts where we would drill down and see what the impact, and I would defer to smarter financial minds than mine as to whether or not we do that randomly or we make some selection. I think it would include checking in with the agency to understand the bigger implications. And at the same time, I would welcome Legislator Maloney's comment about looking at the salaries in that organization all the way to the top. And I also think Legislator Erner has made a point that Legislator Uchitel previously made about these services being privatized out to the not-for-profits, but leaving county, the county service that used to be actually administered by the county, and that's something that needs to be a part of this conversation overall. I just know that at this moment in time, I'm not prepared to move on this until I know what the impact is, even if we had a public hearing. So I feel like it would behoove us to actually get the financial information.
I'm good. Go ahead.
Thanks. I just, on the random, you know, selection, I don't think that you can possibly get a reasonable estimate based on a random sampling because, you know, you're going to have, you know, organizations like Gateway and Family of Woodstock, which the financial impact would be up here, and then you're going to have, you know, a couple of small contractors for daycares, which are going to be way down here. And, you know, so unless you did some sort of a tiered system where you have two from this level, two from this level, and two from this level, I just don't see how you get a reasonable sample.
I'm
you know,
open to whatever. I'm saying I don't
understand. I've heard several times from a couple different people, you know, picking a random sample of 5 or 10 or 15. I just don't think from 200 contracts with the disparate payrolls, I don't see how you could possibly get a reasonable estimate based on a random sample, unless you had some sort of a tiered system.
Deputy Executive Clark.
Just real quick, we were asked to provide a list of contracts that deal with human and social services. A lot of the contracts that we provided are sole proprietors. I think you could probably take those and set those aside when you're looking at whatever sample you're looking at. And so those aren't really, you know, we provided what we were asked for, and then I think there's going to be a little smaller world that you need to look at.
So a couple things. Legislative Maloney, is it possible to get the names of the organizations of the people that contacted you so we have we can start look at those organizations, you know, just to get a kind of snapshot of where we are, right? And then the other thing is there any way to cross-reference people who are being paid through contracts from the county that are also collecting public service, public help from DSS?
That sounds an awful lot like
it's a bit of an invasion, but...
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, is there a way to... Because that's... What you're saying is the real issue here is that people are working here and, you know, they're not... They're also collecting public assistance. And my point was very simple, is that if that's a problem, and I believe that there are some people that that happens to, but is it a real problem? Is it a significant problem? Or is it a very low single-digit percentage of people that we can pinpoint and address that small group
so
of people,
find
rather
people
than...
that don't budget as well as the others, but I suppose.
Well,
some people are making
so
$15.
Snap, you get up to $42,000, so
right.
it would obviously make sense you could be eligible for SNAP
right.
up to $42,000. Doesn't mean you all go on SNAP, but
that's right.
you could.
Right. Exactly.
Well, if you're
then we shame people for it. I don't like. I got an issue with it.
Wrong.
What's that?
Thank you.
That just blew my mind a little bit. That,
well, I'm just trying to find a way to correlate the issue that
a week at 15, it's
the issue that Legislator Maloney, the impetus for this, which
is
the way it was explained to us, was that there are people who are being paid through the county, through contracts and grants through the county, who are also collecting public assistance, right? So to me, that was what the issue was surrounding this public hearing and proposed resolution, right? And so my point was, if we could pinpoint where that is, let's take action on that right away and fix that right away, rather than trying to fix 270 contracts that we, you know, and of course, Deputy Exec Ryder said we could probably pare that down significantly. That would be welcome, right? But from there, you know, I'm not suggesting that we invade anybody's personal rights or anything like that. I'm just suggesting is that we should have a method to determine how serious this problem really is, right? Compared to, you know, a couple of people contacting a lone legislator saying, hey, I'm on DSS and I work for a county, right? I mean, I would just like, look, I have a hard time, you know, with these unknowns, you know, and this to me is a big unknown, you know.
One quick point.
Legislator Nolan.
So I want to second Legislator Ronk's comment that we would need a representative sample here rather than a random sample would be the way to go. And I do think that maybe looking at some subset, and maybe legislators could anonymously suggest contracts or organizations to review as part of the representative sample. This kind of data prior to going to the public is very helpful, so that what we give the public is information and a law to address the problems we've identified. Right now, we're still unclear about the nature of the problem and the extent of the problem. So the better we do that work, the more informed we get the information we get back from the public is, and the more helpful it is for generating a consensus about how to go forward.
Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would, well, one, I think it would be helpful to weed out the sole proprietors and cut the list down if that's readily available. I realize that's what we asked from you, Deputy Executive, but it would be helpful to actually get to the meat of what we really need. And to that point, you know, I think it would probably be less helpful to have legislators randomly anonymously suggesting which ones to look at, then it would be to consult with the department who is dealing with those budgets on a regular basis to talk about what might be representative, because I'm sure they know better than we. We're looking at not to exceed contracts. So, you know, it takes layers of investigation to determine not just what the contract allows, but then what it actually does, and then drill down into each of, you know, how that breaks out. And I think it may not even be readily apparent at that point. And that's to Legislator Maloney's earlier point about how difficult this may be to get to. But I think we need to try to get a little bit more granular on the numbers.
All right.
Yeah, it sounds like the arguments here, I feel like what I'm hearing, fall into three different categories. There's you know, logistical challenges to figure out what these true costs are and what the actual individual people are making compared to how much we feel that they deserve. There are those of us that I feel are you know, staunch supporters of getting folks resources, and quite frankly, and I'm speaking for myself here, I know, because I've talked to these folks. I have seen in many different avenues with confidence that they are underpaid, and I know that if we went forward with this, we would be able to get them more resources. And I understand there's a third category of argument that's really about the effects of giving folks more resources. It's going to push wages up, and some folks maybe don't want wages pushed up. I disagree with that. I think we do need wages pushed up. I don't view that as a knock-on negative effect. I view that as kind of the point. But I do have a fair amount of sympathy for the logistical challenge of figuring this stuff out. So if we can't get this moved forward, if we can't have a serious conversation, if we can't make progress in a serious conversation about getting more wages because we have this logistical challenge, perhaps the next resolution that we need to submit, and I invite anyone to work on this with me, because I'd be willing to step up and try and put this in, is a data of record keeping. Maybe it's a local law that compels us to keep certain records that allow us to track what we're really doing with our public funds and how it affects the incomes in our community, because so many people are relying on these incomes, and even more people, 180,000 I would say, are reliant on interacting with the staff that we're talking about paying here. So I think it would be a worthwhile endeavor to solve this logistical problem. If we can't solve it on this resolution, the next resolution needs to be one that solves that, because we've been hearing this every month, and we need to solve this, because that it's that gray area where we don't know the answer to that question that we're able to save so much money by outsourcing to nonprofits in the private sector.
All right, Maloney's next, but just keep in mind, it sounds like this is not going to go through today. Okay. So let's, you know, we do have an agenda still to get through. So Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, I actually have written right here, all contracts should include a survey to collect this info going forward. So perhaps we'll throw that resolution up. I'm sure you guys would be happy to do that. It's a simple enough thing, whether it's part of the RFP or whatever. And then at least we'll start collecting some of that data, and we'll take a look at a couple of months if we can't get this going forward. Also, 32 hours a week at $15 an hour is less than $24,000 a year. I don't think we're going to find too many people that aren't being subsidized, which is the other part of that. We can subsidize them and empower them, or we can put them on social services. Going forward, let's do that. And I'll just say that dollars to donut, all these millions of dollars we're going to spend, the Elizabeth Street contract, some of these ARPA funds, we won't spend combined time talking and looking for the information that we're looking for here, and that's a crime. All right. But I'm committed to the only way we're going to get that information is through some kind of a, I don't think we're going to be able to send our two budget analysts into some mining expedition to pull some magic number.
I just want to say that I would prefer that this also get tabled, and I would make the commitment as the chair of Health, Human Services, and Housing to have a special meeting with DSS and really have a conversation about these different contract organizations and what the implications, bring these people in and have them talk to us and assist in the process of getting some of this information as a part of a meeting. I think it's come up enough times of really understanding these contract agencies. It helps us when we see a budget that half of them are cut, and it helps us when we see that there are add-ons, and so I think the more we can understand that process. So I would suggest we table this as well and do that work. Otherwise, for myself, I would have to say no at this time.
For clarification, do you mean taking no action again?
Yes. Sorry, no action.
I have just two other sponsors. Laura, what are you looking
for? I'd like to call a vote, and then we can always introduce another resolution.
That's fine, too.
I'm ready to move forward and vote, but it's up to everybody else.
We're getting out of it what I really wanted to get out of it.
We'll give this a second. Just a couple of comments here. So the public hearing part, you know, when we have sufficient information and we can present the entire picture to the public, that's when I feel comfortable having public hearings. When they only have a narrow focus of the goal is to raise from 15 to 20 with no impact, maybe it does change somebody's mind and maybe it doesn't. But without having that information, you don't know. They don't know what it's really going to, what, as Herc put it, unintended consequences, what they're going to be. So I think we have to have that in order to have a public hearing. Just to have a public hearing, just to hear public comment, well, they may feel one way when they find out, it's going to raise their taxes potentially, or it's going to cost us, millions of dollars extra. Their opinion may change when they hear that. The whole thing about raising the rate, and I agree with Legislator Ronk on this, when you start to set these minimum wage numbers there, you almost potentially put the people who are in those positions out of those positions for people who may have more qualifications. If you go from 15 to 20, that's a huge jump. That would be like an EMS world. If you said to the thing, you're gonna start paying, one agency is gonna start paying $25 an hour for EMTs because they can't get anybody. Well, now all of a sudden you got paramedics who are interested in that position. It's jumping in there. And which would you hire, an EMT who's a lesser certification, or would you hire a paramedic? That's the concerning unintended consequences. Again, those are the type of things to think through. So, all right, if there's no other discussion, then I'll call for the vote. All those in favor? Opposed? Motion defeated. Thank you. All right, resolution number 18, appointing independent administrative hearing officer amended as presented before you, plus amended to appoint Kyle Barnett as the independent administrative hearing officer.
I think we're going to have to do that on the floor.
Okay.
We can't amend in committee on the
meeting. You can do both.
You have to do both. Or you have to at least do it on the floor.
Right.
But you can do it here too.
That's fine. I'll make that amendment.
Okay. Second?
Second.
All right. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 29, funding capital project 601, ARP Small Business Economic Recovery, as amended, as presented before you.
I'll move it for
second.
Discussion.
I'll second it.
Second, Walter, discussion. Walter.
I'll just say that, and I've said it before, so I'll try to say it briefly, especially because we have more things to handle. It's not that I feel that this on itself is not going to be helpful to businesses. If I was to think about how I would prioritize supporting the businesses in Ulster County, it doesn't rise to the very top, even if it was here before other ones. I'm particularly concerned about the empty places. I drive around in many of these towns and I see a lot of empty storefronts and empty businesses, and I feel like that should be a priority that helps the existing businesses as well as get more people in that world. I think that while it was absolutely a struggle, COVID, and maybe if this was brought up a year or a year and a half ago, I might feel really differently, but now we're all with our masks off, I see people in the stores, I see people in the restaurants, recovery is happening. Naturally, but there's still these empty storefronts. There are people who were put out of business, there are people who were going to start their businesses and never did, and those are the ones who I would want to prioritize, housing prioritize, so that we can bring in more companies that could have housing for their employees. But I think there are ways we can improve, economically improve the experiences of businesses, and I don't think that this rises to the very top for me as the way to do it. And again, every time we spend ARP money, we have less ARP money. And so, I'm gonna be a no but not because, you know, it is not a reflection of not desiring to support our small businesses. I just think we could do a better job of it.
Thanks. You know, I think that one thing, you know, we talked about it a little bit in the previous resolution, but, you know, not every business is closing their doors because of, you know, a lack of business or a lack of funding or those things. We have a workforce crisis. And, you know, we talked about, you know, pulling people from one industry to another to another. I know a lot of business owners that are sick and tired of working, you know, 100 hours a week themselves trying to keep their business afloat because they can't get anybody to work. You know, no matter what they pay, they just can't get people to work. People do not want to work. You know, so I respect, you know, I know, you know, Director Wiedemann had mentioned that, you know, businesses were closing and that's why we're, you know, trying to, you know, rush to move this forward. I feel like that's one of the comments that was made at last week's meeting. You know, I don't know that this is going to solve a lot of problems. I was a strong no on it prior to the amendment. With the amendment, I feel like I can support it, but I'm gonna really have to have some trust that the EDA is gonna make it work. You know, for businesses all over the county, and on a need basis, not on a, you know, first in, you know, I'd like $35,000, please, basis.
I also want to add, you know, we just came from this conference and they talked about the improvements in sales tax and they showed that it's industry specific. And Legislator Maloney brought this point up before, is that products did really, really well during COVID. Restaurants, hotels did not. And so to make this sort of broad and not recognize that there are some businesses that were particularly, that was a harder hit than others, this as it is doesn't necessarily do that kind of thing. And so it goes back to this point that I think we could do this better.
Yeah, to the industry point, if you're going to do a government bailout, it has to be by industry. It's only ever been done by industry. Airline, banking, that there's a reason you do it by industry. I mean, I can't even imagine just opening something up to a county our size and going, hey, businesses, without any, I mean, I've talked to people, not many of the people I've talked to have heard anything about this, which is a problem as well. I've looked to other counties. It seems like the city of Albany is doing a great job of getting a lot of input and getting the word out there. I don't like this to begin with. I think sometimes we forget when we're government and we think we're something we're not. There's one thing government does not know, and that is economic development, and we prove it every chance we get. Infrastructure, that's why economic development was always a part of planning. Infrastructure. The businesses will come. We're an hour and a half north of New York City, and we're an hour south of Albany. Give me a break that we're going to take $1 million and just start spreading it out. Ice cream shops across the street from ice cream shops where they're now traveling the world trying ice cream, I guess, on our dime. We saved that business. Wig makers and that started in the middle of COVID. I mean, this is silliness. And I'm in the private sector. I'm a businessman. This is silliness.
Yeah, so I've struggled with this one too, and I've spoken with Director Wiedemann about it, and my fellow legislators. One thing I will definitely want to be offering on the next one, on 98, which is the contract, is a reduction in the administration and the
advertising.
It has another name, right? Program delivery. Thank you. And the program delivery fees. And also, if it's not in there, if it's not written in there, to make sure that it states it's a not to exceed number. You know, I know it does say that it's on a rolling basis. Right now, the program delivery is at 100, and the administration is at 50. And through conversation with Director Weaver, I also understand that some of that money, that's not the services that aren't in-house might go to services such as audit, which is probably a critical component. You know, I'd like to see a reduction, you know, at the minimum of taking the 100 down to 75 and the 50 down to 25, but I'd be open to whatever the committee wants to see. I have to say that I feel at a very conflicted place here, and having sat at this table before, it's like I don't want my vote today to be the deciding factor on whether or not this is going to the floor. If it's the will of this committee to send this to the floor, I'm willing to vote with the committee on it. But I'm going to say that I, even at this moment, I'm not 100% sure where I'll be on the floor. You know, that my conversation today helped me to realize that we agree. We have some of the same concerns in terms of this program design, the idea of making eligible businesses, and it goes to the conversation we were having previously, making eligible the businesses that attest to 51% of their workforce being below a certain income threshold and not requiring that the monies that we're providing them go to change those people's situation is a problem. Director Wiedemann has said that he has thought the same thing, mm-hmm. and that there'll be changes in the program, and I take him at his word. It's not the only reason I'm saying it publicly on tape, but I take him at his word. But I also I do have concerns about the other aspect that says that the other aspect of eligibility is a business owner's income. As it's presented on the page, which is a snapshot in time for that owner's income in an individual year when the business in question may be doing well and three of their other businesses may not be doing so well, which may be affecting their bottom line of their business, etc. So I think if we're going to be helping businesses, and this will be something, no matter how I vote, that I hope gets shaken out in the analysis of the applications, but that... that we're choosing businesses based on the business and the program, because choosing it based on the income of the applicant is actually a different program. It's about the applicant. And I understand where they connect, but to my perspective, it's a different program. And again, it's like I feel to a certain degree, and I'm coming from the perspective of running, you know, and being very involved in two family owned hospitality businesses in this county, one in this county, one in Orange County, but I'm just not sure that this program is the best designed to meet the needs. But again, I want to defer to my colleagues and have respect for the long discussions that my colleagues have had here. So if it's this committee's will to send it to the floor, I will not stand in the way of that, but again, I just have to be honest that I'm struggling with this, and I don't know where I'll be on the floor.
So you're voting last in committee then? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just curious. I mean, we have some hospitality businesses here. Were you aware of this funding source? Because applicants have been received, so... Yeah, I'm just curious. Just because I happen to know...
The income would be way lower. It's like 25.
I understand, but it's about making people aware, and I was just curious because how people were made, businesses were made aware of this opportunity. And so just as people who are attentive to what's going on with the county, I was just wondering if they even knew of its existence. I'm not saying whether they applied, but I think that's a particular concern of even who knows and is aware of this, but...
But we're cutting the advertising budget.
Yes.
Well, no, I'm saying no to the whole thing, so that's not a problem.
All right. That's the wrong thing. Thanks. Advertising budget is all well and good, but, I mean, we were told that, you know, originally, before this amendment, we were told that they had a whole list of businesses all set up for the first in money from the CARES Act, so... You know, any amount of money that would have been used for advertising would have been, I think, pretty well squandered at that point, because we weren't means testing it, and we weren't expanding it. It was going to be, you know, we had more than $1 million worth of businesses that had applied for the CARES funding and didn't get there fast enough.
Yeah, thank you. So I agree with just about everything everyone said here today. I really think that we should really look hard at the advertising, because as Senator Ronk said, you know, this is after we have an extensive list of people that have already applied and qualified for these, right? Based on the original list. Now, That's part A. Part B is that with the amendments that are going to come on the next resolution, right, which I assume will be reducing the fee structure that the UCEDA is going to request from the county, and the second thing being creating a screening committee that will include members of the legislature to look at some of these applicants and have some weigh in on that, you know, with those things. And, you know, being around the first CARES Act as a board member of UCEDA and seeing that list, and then seeing how that list just was crazy big when we first saw it. And I agree with Legislator Bartels as well, is that list was created a year ago, right? So we really should probably retrench that and look at where we are today. And so for that reason, the advertising maybe not cut that as, you know, as much as we're thinking, but just something to chew on there. The administrative aspect of this is something that sticks in my craw. We just passed three jobs in the county to administer ARPA funds, right? And so now we have to contract out to UCEDA to administer ARPA funds. It doesn't make any sense to me, right? I would much rather see that workload offloaded to the people that we just hired within the county than pay anything at all for administrative fees, right? That's just my personal opinion, you know? We had hours and hours of discussion about those three positions, right? And how they could be utilized, right? And what the job responsibilities of those people was gonna be. And to me, this is exactly what the justification for those jobs was, right? So for me, I would really be very, very comfortable with seeing an amendment like that too on the contract side of this.
Chair Bartels, then Kelly Nolan.
Yes. So just to the advertising, you know, that's my understanding is the advertising is contained in the $100,000 program delivery, not the $50,000 administrative fee. But I also, in looking at the detail, and I don't have it up in front of me, the advertising, and Director Reedman can speak to this, the advertising was, even that $100,000 in the first phase, was never, it talked about social media and very low cost types of outreach, and we may have a debate about wanting to do something different, but somehow I don't imagine advertising for this on a radio or with billboards on a bus or on television, right? So we're already removing the very expensive forms of advertising in part because of their reach, and in part it's even less than expense, and in part because of their time. You've never put out billboards or bus ads, because ideally you'd want to get the feedback more quickly than those signs live. So I suspect that even a whole new round of outreach could be done in a way that's very cost effective. We're not talking about high end. I mean, that's why when I first saw that $100,000 and thought it was advertising, I couldn't even imagine how you could spend $100,000 on advertising.
Yeah, so I'll tell you how you can spend $100,000 on advertising.
That's a different
Deputy Secretary Kelly.
So I did want to touch on just one point. When we're talking about economic development, this is kind of recovery. This is more on the rescue side. When we're talking about filling empty storefronts and having a program geared towards that, that's more of an economic development specific thing. And I think I would encourage you to reach out to Director Weedman and have that conversation. I would also, you know, there's a comment about the other work that goes on in economic development. I will point to two projects, and they're in diverse parts of the community. One is Cresco, that's down in Ellenville. That's 300 to 400 jobs that's gonna be coming, and that's a lot of intensive work that we've been engaged in for a very long time on the economic development side. That's a countywide impact. That's more of a regional impact. The other thing is National Resources coming into Enterprise and resurrecting that site. Again, you're talking about hundreds of jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to pour into the county. It's going to have an effect on every single industry around us. So when we're talking about the other work that we're doing about attracting businesses, trying to hook in these so-called big fish for transformative projects, that's happening. And that's a lot of the work that department's been doing. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I do know a couple of small businesses that either looked at or applied for CARES. And the way they found out about it was that the time when a lot of recovery monies were being offered, and so there was a lot of outreach to us, to the county, to find out what was available, and there was a lot of searching on the internet. So there was, I think, broad awareness, but there is probably a need to revive that, because we're now 9 months after that period where everybody was looking to find out what monies are out there.
Yeah, so if there was no pandemic for 2 years, then filling empty storefronts would be economic development. If the storefronts are empty because stores closed during the pandemic, it's absolutely recovery, not just economic development. You know, it's all about what caused it. We also consistently are hearing about problems with hiring. I mean, for me, when I talk about what, when I think about what things would go above it, not only is it filling in those gaps, but maybe just offering, you know, money to businesses to do hiring bonuses so that they can bring people on. And the question I have, because I'm a little confused now, is, are all those all those businesses that have already applied, are they just getting washed off now and it's starting fresh, or are they it? Because, first of all, they applied a year and a half ago, so I imagine whatever their need was then may not be their need now. But I'm not getting a clear sense of, like, is the plan to just anyone who's on that list is off and we're starting fresh, or are they staying as whoever's on the list is who's getting this or who's getting chosen from?
Who is on the list will remain eligible to apply. This will be a second round. And the reason that we've asked for a continued budget for the program delivery, a large portion of which was envisioned to be advertising and marketing, but that's not the only thing in that, I can speak more to that in a second, is so that we can get the word out to more businesses, have them submit their applications, and under the new method that Legislator Cahill described, we would pool all of those applications, score them, and then award them on a competitive basis.
And how will you confirm that the problems, that whatever they said their need was a year or a year and a half ago, remains their need?
We will reach back out to them and ask them to affirm that their application, they would still like it reviewed.
You're just going to say, would you still like your application reviewed? And if they say yes, you're assuming the need that they had a year and a half ago continues to be their need?
Or they can update their application.
That sounds problematic. I would think that you would need anyone who applied a year or a year and a half ago.
So it's not
to
a
have
year.
To
it was in October was the first round. We've been accepting applications up until late December.
Okay,
so
but it's the starters that I'm talking about. And so it just sort of seems, again, if these people are on this list, they've talked about a need some time ago. I feel like I would need to feel like this was a fresh start if it even went forward.
I have a question and a comment. I really wish Legislator Bartels were here for it, but she's not. My question is, are we reopening for more applications?
Yes.
What's the application period going to be on that?
We have not yet decided. It probably depends on when this actually gets approved.
Understood. Chris?
Sorry, I was going to say, we're trying to mirror the non-for-profit program in terms of a rollout. So that's what the discussions have centered on. So
yeah.
I think what Tim, and you can jump in and correct me, we're saying that there's an existing pool that we're going to reach back out to and educate them on the new process that we're discussing here today.
Understood.
Then there'll be a new call for additional applications and everybody gets scored within the same grouping on the new criteria that we're establishing.
I just sincerely hope that it's more than just an affirmation that they still need the money. That's, you know, that's a very sincere hope of mine.
Okay.
And I have every confidence in the minority's representative on the EDA board that that's going to happen. The second thing is, Legislator Bartels asked how so much money could go into advertising. Large cardboard checks cost a lot of money.
Not the controller.
Mr. Lentz?
I mean, as far as advertising, we know who the small businesses are in this county. Anybody who runs for countywide office knows exactly how much it costs to put a mailing out. That's the cheapest way to go. So instead of advertising and doing everything, you just put together a mailer, you mail it to every small business, then the ball's in their court. If they want to, they file an application. If they don't, they throw it in the garbage. Done.
You're making too much sense, Herb. You got to stop with that. enough for one night.
I just stand by, if it's not by industry, it's just, you're going to be hurting other businesses. We've probably already hurt other businesses. I mean, by you give it to one and there's other identical businesses that are struggling the same way or not struggling, and by definition, a business always needs money. I mean, every business is always going to be able to say, yes, right. I could use some money, and we're just putting it out there. I mean, a mailer, I don't know, I'm just sending mailers out now begging for us to find people that want a couple of bucks. It's just...
I have been hearing a lot of feedback on this, and I appreciate the feedback. My conversation with the chair earlier today, I think we came upon a recognition that I just want to express to this group as well, which is that, you know, we started thinking about this process a year ago. We put in an application to the state under CARES funding to provide assistance to our businesses as they were struggling in the height of the pandemic. That was received well by the state, and we've begun to implement that program. About 6 months ago, as we in the executive's office were working on plans to try to think about what we could use ARPA funding to do to support our business community, we thought that the extension of that program would be a good step. And so I recognize that the situation has changed. I still feel that there is sufficient need to warrant this additional request, and so that's why I'm here still, kind of 3 months into talking about this and trying to find a way to meet with your approval. But I would also just stress that, you know, I think often, as Deputy Executive Kelly pointed out, our work in economic development does focus on the larger businesses, the hospitality and tourism industry, our larger business attraction efforts. And, you know, we set out 2 years ago to create a people-centered economy. And I think what we're seeing here is a program that is really geared towards individual people, many of them sole proprietors or S-corps, that are the smallest of the small businesses that have struggled throughout this pandemic, and we're trying to make sure that we don't have more closed storefronts, that we have a thriving business community as we come out of this pandemic to pick up where we left off when the pandemic started. And I think our evidence so far in the work that we've done and the conversations that we have on a daily basis with businesses throughout our county suggests that this is a good approach. Certainly, I'm always open to suggestions and feedback to refine it, and look forward to continuing that as we further discussions about the rest of the ARPA funding and how to use portions of that to support our small businesses.
So first I'll say my parents closed their small business during COVID, and they won't be able to apply for this because this business is closed already. And I want to also add that we have an ARP committee who assessed this and scored it very, very low in terms of their different factors. When we ran it by legislators to ask how they feel, and those who responded, it scored pretty low. I appreciate that the executive's office wants to do well by our small businesses. I'm so supportive of our small businesses. Once again, I just don't think this is the smartest way to go about it.
Thanks. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time a member of the Ryan administration talked to me closer to not voting for something by something that they said, I'd be a wealthy person at this point. Director Wiedemann, you keep saying we don't want more businesses to close their doors. I don't know that you have a shred of evidence that this program is going to stop businesses from closing their doors. It may keep them open a couple extra months. But if $35,000 is going to is going to mean the business isn't going to close their doors, it means that the business is pretty close to closing their doors and will probably close their doors anyway, because there's not money coming behind this money. Unless you have new empirical data to suggest that this is going to cause several businesses not to close their doors, I would appreciate if you'd stop using that phrase, because it's great for a soundbite, but I don't think it actually means economic development or even recovery. It's very frustrating. It's the second time I've heard you say it, the second meeting in a row, and it's really frustrating to me.
If I might, I'm sorry to have frustrated you. I'd love to have a longer conversation about it. I'm not trying to claim that this is going to save a business that otherwise was going to fail, but I think that our businesses are struggling right now, and the decision to close is not always a financial one. And so I think it's worth recognizing that providing support to our small business community in whatever form is a gesture that says that we support them, and I think they need that right now. So that's what I mean by it. I
respect that, but $1 million is more than a gesture. and $1 million, you know, in a different place might be able to help struggling businesses more than singling out several of them for $35,000. You know, and then we could do more than a gesture. We could actually, you know, make a difference. I understand what you're saying, and I understand how that would pull on somebody's, you know, heartstrings, you know, the idea that, you know, we're saving a business, but I just don't believe that that's what this does.
Look, if you're going to do this, I think you have to say, why are we doing it? Okay, it's COVID. It hurts certain businesses. Pick the industries that were hurt by COVID that a little bit of money would help get through, and then from there, give us every reason to think that they would then succeed. But none of what I'm seeing here is that approach, identifying industries inside of Ulster County that normally would have been thriving, that were hurting, that we want to be there when we're on the other side of COVID, which we're hopefully starting to be, which begs another question, should we even be doing this anymore? Because if you've made it this far, if you're going to succeed and be and thrive, then you will, because you've made it this far. But if not, you have to identify it, in my mind, by industry, why they were affected by COVID, how are they going to make it through after COVID if we get them there, and why is this small amount of money going to actually get them there? So I think we all agree with the intent, but a lot of us have issues with the approach.
Any other discussion? All right. I actually have a lot of feelings that a lot of people express at this table. I'm in the same boat when it comes to where Chair Bartels was on this. I don't want to hold it up here if it's going to pass to get it to the floor, because I would hate to be the stumbling block which would delay it another month if we're just going to pass it in a month from now. But Tim and I have had a lot of conversations on this. While it is better than what we were first presented with, if it had to start from the ground up, I had my preference on it, it wouldn't look like this. So while I'm not going to hold it up for tonight myself, if there's not enough votes on the floor, I wouldn't be disappointed either. So,
I mean, just to explain my vote, because I'm going to be voting a very reluctant yes, and the one and only reason that I'm voting yes to get out of committee is out of a deep amount of respect and admiration for my colleague Legislator Litz, who's our appointee on the EDA as the Deputy Chair of Economic Development, and that is the only reason that I'm supporting it, because I've had deep concerns. I came here a little bit more excited, and the same arguments are being thrown on the table that I think are a little bit ridiculous.
I would like to only approve ARP that have no deep concerns. I feel like this money's going to go. Why have anything that we have deep concerns? Why don't we just approve the ones that we're all pretty damn excited about and feel like are important and well done?
I have deep concerns about the stabilization center being in Kingston, but
well, then you shouldn't
I'm
have voted for it.
That.
And so, but my point is that it just seems ridiculous to me that we have people saying yes that they're concerned about it. No due respect to anybody, but 34 or 32 million is going to go fast, and there's no reason why we can't be behind and excited about each of these. And I've heard nothing but deep concerns about this in every committee, the ARP committee and here, that it just feels like if there's not a red flag about a resolution, you know, this is it. We've got so many people uncomfortable with this. And there's no reason why we couldn't put our heads together and have an excellent small business ARP proposal by next month that people would really get behind.
By next month? Okay.
I think we've heard enough of what the concerns are and what
kidding.
It would need to
yes.
take. Honestly, I do think we could.
I was kidding.
I think we could have 17 proposals by next month. I'm not sure we could have one.
We should be able to. I don't know.
Right. My
don't
point know being will. Is that with this opportunity, it just seems a shame for anything that has so many concerns about it to just for that to be ignored.
It's okay to say no, right?
No, I'm okay saying no.
But we can say no to the executive once in a while, right?
All right, if nothing else, then let's just go for a vote here. All those in favor?
I'm reluctant, yes.
Two, three,
to be
four.
Honest.
Okay.
No.
One no. All right, thank you. If those of you want to leave, please feel free to.
I'm not holding
I think some
prisoner.
Of us, if we could, we would
You're not offering that to the committee members.
No, no, that's why I purposely overshot the committee members and even looked to the far of the room. Sorry. So, all right, 32. Approving the execution of a contract for $1 million to the county.
I'll move it.
As presented, amended as presented.
I'll second it.
Thanks. Discussion?
I think the discussion stands as is the last one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this the one
Chair.
You wanted to do something up? Did you do what you wanted to do?
This is 32.
The amendment to the, you make the amendment to
this
I thought
is
we
it
were
right
on the
now.
Floor.
We just
we're
got
here. Really.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility since we have to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Did you? Did we agree on a number?
How about zero? We just do it in-house. No more safe.
I think we
to
did. So the number you said was 75-25, right?
Oh, that's the other one.
That's this one.
What about the 50?
The 25. 50 is
down to
25.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And 100
is
what's
that's
at
the minimum. I mean, I think Justin Hefner stays awake up tonight. Yeah. Please don't let this
happen. Let's just do it on the floor.
We're getting redder and redder.
50, 25.
Those are really hot in here.
All right, cut it in
half.
Cut it in half.
All right. Come on, we only got a half hour here. So there any other comments on this? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, 97, funding capital project 602, ARPA infrastructure and trails.
I'll move it for discussion.
I'll second it.
Walter's discussion.
I'll just say I really had a problem with this one, not because I don't love OSI and love trails. I just, when I think of what the priorities are from COVID and what we need to do with COVID relief money, this isn't it. I think trails offered a wonderful opportunity for people during COVID. They weren't harmed by it, they were helped by it. That said, I'm compelled because I'm told this is the only way we can ever support OSI is in this model, and if that's the case for real, then I will support it, recognizing that it's about supporting OSI. But, you know, this ARP money is just trickling away.
Yeah, I just want to... I mean, that may have been a statement too far that this is the only way we could ever support OSI ever. It's what was stated is that ARPA funds give us a latitude to fund projects directly in a way that if we were to be using our other funds, our general funds, we would have to take an ownership. We cannot make improvements to other people's property, so we would need to take an ownership stake or an easement or some kind of arrangement, and all of that becomes very, very complicated, and that's what was stated.
Yeah.
Whereas the next resolution is one where we could just fund it outright.
Sorry,
so purchase of a property that will be county owned. So I agree with you in spirit, but I just thought it was important.
Yeah, thank you. I just think it's
shorter.
Thanks. I mean, with all due respect to Legislator Walter, you know, she keeps making comments like the money's trickling away and whatnot. I brought up in very passing a concern that I've had for a long time about, you know, the stabilization center, and what she exclaimed when I said that was, well, then vote no. Well, then vote no. I mean, I mean, I'm getting closer and closer to one of Legislator Maloney's many suggestions, which would be to spend it all on water and sewer or to give it all back to the taxpayers, because... You know, everybody's got pet projects involved in the, you know, and everyone's got their list of stuff. I didn't put in a list of stuff. I made one suggestion, which is a countywide suggestion, which is remediating, you know, dilapidated properties on the tax rolls and or, you know, getting them, you know, classified as, you know, brownfields and other classifications, so we could actually apply for some federal and state grants to clean them up and get them back in the tax rolls and actually do something with them. You know, it's not sexy. It doesn't play well on a press release like a stabilization center would, but it's going to make a real impact to the taxpayers of the county, which is why I come here every day.
Yeah, and you know, we said $34 million before. I think we probably are less than half that at this point, and the way we've begun to parse out this money, we've kind of guaranteed that we're not going to do anything big. We could have done something monumental with brownfields. Actually, I think
it's okay.
Well, we're running out of money.
I don't disagree with you.
We need a lot of money, and that was something I would have been totally for. That's why from the beginning I wanted to pick two or three things and make sure that we'll feel this money. This 10% inflation, part of it is because of these massive stimulus packages. Let's not kid ourselves. This inflation started long before the things that are going on recently. We put ourselves behind the eight ball in a lot of ways for this money, and now we're giving it out here and here and here and here, and I'm telling you, in a year or two, we're going to be talking about this ARPA money like we talk about the Ellenville Millions, and we only got a couple of bucks left, and we still can do something real. I've spoken about it with Ken years ago. Brownfields that we leave on, they don't auction off, nobody wants them, we leave them there and let them leach and do whatever it's going to do with our constituents living next door, drinking that water. We could go do something real. Let's stop the money. And it sounds like we're doing something with money because of the way ARPA comes in and the way it's worded that we're not even normally allowed to do with tax dollars. So I just think we should say no to a lot of these things and pick one or two big things and do it. Make sure the money means something in a couple of years. But this, what we're doing, it's in more trails.
I think that we can respectfully agree to disagree on individual projects. I think this is a valuable project, and I think it's going to have a valuable impact, and I think years from now we will look back positively on this project and others. And I agree with Legislator Ronk as to brownfields. I think both brownfields and crisis stabilization are huge projects, actually, that are critically important. I would like to see us spend the initial round, and I look forward to the resolution when it comes through, the initial round of money on brownfields from ARPA, and then dedicate standing budgetary line item to work through that list. I've asked the Commissioner of Finance for a full list of all the projects that are in arrears and eligible for foreclosure that we are carrying due to brownfields issues, and I fully support Legislator Ron's suggestion and think that it should be something that that comes out of the budget moving forward. But I also believe that crisis stabilization is an amazing project that's going to alter lives, and I think the trails are important too. But we're not all going to agree on everything, and that's, you know, and I've proved that already with previous presidents at meetings. So.
Executive Kelly, then Ron.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be super quick. On March 30th, the next ARPA meeting, Amanda Lavalle from Planning will be doing a presentation on brownfields, including all the properties we've identified and how we're going to do a phase one and phase two investigation on the properties. And this is something that we've shared with Chair Bartels as well as Leader Ronk. This is literally the first thing that we discussed when this whole thing came about, really last May. So if you guys want to come to that meeting, we're going to fully disclose and walk everybody through that program, because it's certainly something we want to do as well. Thank you.
Thanks. I actually think that this is I agree with Chairman Bartels. This is a really great use of this funding. I think that infrastructure is one of the things that this money is best used for. And, you know, at a time when, you know, yes, I think Legislator Walter brought up, you know, the trails were booming during COVID when nobody wanted to be around anybody. Everyone went to the woods, which was very nice. And we're blessed in Ulster County to have one of the best trail networks in the state. That's the only reason that we were included in the Empire State Trail, is because we had so much trail infrastructure built up already. The more bikes and pedestrians that we get off the road, the less accidents that we're going to have, which is why I recently suggested a member of the trails community for the traffic safety board, because it's a real concern. Unless we're gonna put full size bike lanes on every road in the county, you know, we need places for people to recreate, and I think that this is a good opportunity for us to aid in that endeavor.
Sorry, Mom.
I had a question about, but I'll talk to Chris. It's nothing to do with this. Right. About that list.
Any discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's okay. 98, approving execution of a contract for $2.1 million for OSI. Can I have a motion?
Move it.
Second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 99, amending capital contract 597, our housing.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Your turn. Discussion? Discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We have you. 101, authorizing the acquisition of real property located at 21 Elizabeth Street. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Walter. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed. Thank you.
Can I have a motion to block 111, 114, 119, 121, 127, and 132?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right. On the block. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Move. Resolution 14, authorizing termination.
This is just worth coming.
Oh, yeah, for 3 months. So we talked about this last time. And then we'll be putting in a resolution for the extending of the contract with
CMA.
Thank you for the budget analysis. So that will come next month. Any other business?
Chair, I know you need to part, but I'll be really quick if I could just make a quick comment. Just ran a report today, and I wanted to fill you in since I will be back before this committee for your next meeting in April to say that right now all governmental funds for 2021 has a very low surplus of $46 million. That does not include year-end Justin Journal entries, but I think you will be seeing a surplus of over $30 million. And I also wanted to let you know that we sent a draft audit of the investment policy compliance to the Commissioner of Finance today.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to say, I think we're going to be taking events out of order and taking a photo before caucuses. So,
okay.
Let's make it get it done because we need to shut the room back.
All right. Motion adjourned.
Motion.
Second.
Oh, Herb's
second.
Not on his committee, so I can
do it.
As long as Herb's not on the committee, I'll do it.
Thank you.
All right.